Greetings from Podcastville. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by FujiSports.com. Let me tell you something. My favorite geese, that's all I wear, is fucking Fuji. I had a nice, beautiful blue element on myself today. You understand me? They got a great new Superado, and they got a great new competition gi. Go take a look. FujiSports.com. If you're a fat fuck, A5, A6, let me tell you something, bro. People always try to pull you down from the guard, from behind the whole thing. They could tug on that thing for hours. Nothing happens to that Fuji fucking gi. Dependable, been around since Jesus left Chicago. Plus, they got fucking mats. Renzo Gracie mats. They got fucking gis. They got fucking kickboxing stuff. They got kettlebells that are rubber. They got a bunch of great stuff. But you got to go to FujiSports.com right now. Press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 10% off right now, motherfuckers. Number two. Listen, you're getting in shape. You're trying to get your life together. You got to get some supplements, all right? Onnit's the way to go. Whether you're getting the Alpha Brain or the Shroom Tech Sport, you cannot go fucking wrong. Do you understand me? We'll talk about it more in length later on. But right now, go to Onnit.com and press in.
Church.
Oh, shit. Church. Get 10% off delivered right to your motherfucking house. You don't even have to go nowhere. Kick that motherfucking muley. Wednesday, May 9th. Kick that muley. I want my speakers on fire, Lee.
I just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate another day of life with my faith in the people.
There you go.
The people let me down.
Fuck them in the
so
ass. Every day, cocksuckers. It's the Church of What's Happening Now, baby. What's happening? It's a beautiful day to be alive. I got the Flying Jew, a.k.a. Christ Killer number one. And I got my main man, Steve DeSimone. It's fucking Confessional Wednesday. We're going
to
talk about
I don't think Steve wants
here.
To sit next to me anymore with the name Christ Killer.
No, he's all right. He lets it go.
Lee.
Yeah, he lets it go.
All right, thank
you. He doesn't hold
grudges. I love you.
It's not like that. Speaking of
you.
It's crazy. I was telling Lee last night that I went to Tempe this weekend.
Okay.
And it's because you're like, listen, as a comic, we're whores. You're a fucking whore. There comes a time around the fourth year that you just want to do everything.
Yeah.
That's what it needs to do to make it happen. But then you have to tighten up your seatbelt at some point in your career and stop being a whore. And that's when things start happening for
yes.
you. And for me, it started by taking advice from others. You know, I would listen to what Joe Rogan had to say to me. If Ari had a plug and a joke, you know, I trust Ari.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? If I had a problem with something, a gig or something, you have to let your ego down.
Yes.
A lot of times. And I've known you since the beginning. I mean, we were opening up for Dice 99.
I think you were the first person to put me on stage at the Comedy Store open mic in 2000.
Yeah, that had to be.
September 2000, October 2000.
It's crazy how this has been a journey for the both of us. And when I see you, you know, you're from Philly.
Yeah.
You're Catholic.
Yes.
You've never seen The Exorcist. I mean, you take
it
seriously.
Yeah.
You run charities. I mean, there's so many good things you do. So when I'm around you, it makes me feel better. Like you're one of the guys that I went to martial arts with when I was up to 16 years old. You were decent kids, didn't really curse.
Yeah.
They did not drink. They did not smoke pot. I found them entertaining and I enjoyed them.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to go get pussy. Like, they wanted to hang out. We were geeks. You know,
yes.
We were karate geeks.
Yep.
And at that point, you want to finger feet.
You want to listen to Black Sabbath, drop acid.
So I had two sets of friends for a while. I was trying to play two sides of the fence. And the karate guys didn't know about my crazy friends, and my crazy friends didn't know about my karate friends. And then I had to make a decision one day.
Yeah.
And I went with the crazy people because the karate guys, and I loved them dearly.
Right, they weren't as much fun.
They weren't as much fun.
Yeah,
they wanted
especially
to
when you're
save
a kid.
Their money and go to Honda in New York and look at that fucking geese and look at fucking elbow equipment and rubber pads for your head so you could beat each other up. But it's so weird how whenever I see you, like I could talk to you and I know you'll give me a straight answer. You know, everybody in this town blows smoke up your ass.
Yeah.
And that's what happens to people. Lee and I were talking about a comic we saw that's just damaged. From what this town did to him.
It's easy to happen.
And it's easy to happen.
That can happen very easily.
Because, you know, It's so weird. Remember when you used to open up for Paulie for a long time? Did you ever have a night when people come up to you and say, you know what? We're so happy you were here. You were so much funnier than Paulie.
Yeah.
But then you see them go over to Paulie and go, Paulie, you're so great. We love you. You're like, look at fucking people.
Yes.
They're so fucking wormy. You know what I'm saying?
I think that was part of Mitzi's logic to make us work the door so we could get an appreciation for what that audience was. You get to see people who they really are. And so you would have that planted in the back of your head, like, are you going to change who you are to please these people? Because that was one thing. I remember once I did a joke in front of her, and she just goes, you're better than that. That's all she said. And I was like, well, she goes, I don't want to see it again. You're better than that. I remember.
It's weird when you do a fucked up joke and it kills a room and you feel it and you feel like an asshole. But this weekend I went to Tempe, and this has been, I don't know, I mean, we've been doing the podcast how long now? Six years.
Wow.
So maybe the year and a half we had the guy kidnapped call in.
how great of a sentence is that?
I love it when you call him your kidnappy.
The kidnappy. I had him call in, and I apologized to him. And I sincerely meant it from my heart.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? I really meant it from my heart. As crazy as it sounds, guys, there's a couple calls I got to make. This Saturday night, I had like a nervous breakdown in my hotel room about a different situation in my life that I have to take care of.
Okay.
You know, I have like three of those loose strings that I really have to take care of. Forget my daughter. That's never going to happen. But I got to open up the line of communication with my sister again. Yeah. The phone call with my sister is a tough phone call. She feels cheated. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
She lost her mother. Her mother left her there, so there's a void in her heart. There's just a bunch of issues when I talk to her, and it takes me 3 days to get over.
Yeah.
Like, when I hang up the phone, I got to have two martinis. I don't even drink fucking martinis.
You know what I'm saying?
This family I grew up with in Jersey, I got to call them soon. It's starting to eat away at me, you know? I'm an old school Catholic. I feel guilty, whatever.
Yeah.
And I want to make amends. You know,
that's it.
Very
mercy,
lucky they came into penance. My life. So I've kept in touch with this kid in the kidnappy, and I keep talking to him, you know, and I call him and I ask him how his mother's doing, because that's why he moved to Tucson. And we talk, you know, once a month, whatever. And so this time we talked up to the point where he was coming to the show.
Wow.
You know, and then Thursday he was coming and I didn't hear from him. Friday he called me. Yeah. I was at kickboxing. I called him back and he goes, my mother's been in the hospital.
Oh, Jesus.
So I don't know if I can make it tonight, but I'll definitely see you for dinner tomorrow night. And I never heard from him all day.
Okay.
And I didn't remember till in between the two shows.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you something. I went back to my hotel room and I was kind of depressed. Like, I was really sad about it. And all of a sudden, I go, wait a second. Why would he want to come see me?
Yeah.
I fucking kidnapped him and put him in a trunk of a car for 8 hours. That guy, he probably had to go to therapy for 8 years because of what I did to him. Why would he want to see me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who the fuck do I think I am that this guy's going to just pop up here and be my friend? Like, he even said, let's go to dinner and let's catch up. But I got to guarantee you that before he gets in his car, he's like, what, am I fucking crazy? This is the guy that put me in a fucking car and then put me in the hands with some other guy who, thank God, he was driving without his headlights on and he got caught. This shit fucking bothers me, you know?
Yeah.
But then I came to terms. I go, what do I expect out of life?
Mm-hmm.
That people are just going to forgive you? That's bullshit that they just spew in the Bible at you, that people are really, really, really going to forgive you. It's kind of weird.
You can't, the way I look at it is, for me personally, my job is to forgive. That doesn't mean I expect it from other people. Does that make sense? Like, I think you're doing everything right with that situation, because you're even being compassionate enough to think about things from his point of view. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it's got to be painful for him and fear involved there. But the simple fact that you created this relationship is a miracle to me to begin with. You know what I mean? And maybe there could be that legitimate healing, that legitimate, like...
No, but then I turned the table
around. That's the secret to life. You know what I mean?
I turned the tables around. I thought to myself, wait a second. If somebody put... If I had 2 kilos of coke,
yes,
and I invited you to my house,
right,
and you robbed me, would I want to see you? Not fucking really. Like, I actually said that to myself, started laughing my ass off at 2 in the morning, and then I fell asleep.
Right.
By the way, that's why I fell asleep on the plane the other day, because I was fucking tired. I didn't sleep that night. This was going through my head.
I was like, sleeping at the airport, and out of the corner of my eye, I'm like, that looks like skinny Uncle Joey. You must have lost 20 pounds since the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It was so much fun. That's my favorite thing about being a comedian and seeing your friends.
Yes. Oh, my God.
The airport is the greatest.
Thursday morning.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you go through certain gates, people go, you just missed Felipe.
Yeah.
You just missed D.L. Hughley. You just missed Carlos. It's fucking crazy.
It's great. Yeah.
It's crazy. On Thursday mornings at 5, yeah. I'll be sitting there sometimes, and I would just be like, I'll get there early, eat breakfast, like a 6 a.m. flight, 7 a.m. flight.
Yeah.
I'll get there way before 6.
Me too.
And I get there and I just get 2 eggs sunny side up. I set that little Mexican kind of joint, like a doctor. You know what I'm saying? Water. I take my blood pressure medication. I eat my edible.
Yeah.
The Mexican lady knows me already because I sit at the bar. So yeah. There's no drama.
Yep.
People have to wait online.
You don't have to wait for just a table.
Go to the fucking bar. And you're there by yourself. Who gives a fuck?
Yep.
I'm there in the corner. It's
place where you're walking down. I think it's on the right hand side.
It's on the right hand side.
Yeah, I know that spot.
And I sit there sometimes and I'll see, George Lopez walk by, then D.L. Hughley.
Yeah.
The one day I saw Eddie Griffin and it was great. It was great.
And wow, I haven't seen him in years.
Years. Like, you just see a lot of fucking people. But back to this fucking forgiveness shit.
Yeah, it's everything.
It's crazy. Years ago, I fucking, it was a misunderstanding. And I still feel guilty about it this day because she went through surgery over it.
Okay.
When we were kids, we were riding bikes. And this girl was riding, took one of my bikes. And we were living on Charles Court. I lived on Gibbonette Terrace, but they lived on Charles Court. And the girl took my bike that, there was a bike thief that lived next door to me, and he would steal bikes, but he would mix the bike parts together.
Yeah. Okay. It was like a chop shop for BMX bikes.
He was a chop shop for anything.
Yeah.
The guy was just brilliant.
How old was he?
He was my age, but he was very much of a nerd. He had glasses. He's a dentist today, and he won't return my calls. I've called him a bunch of times. Another guy that I put through the fucking mill.
Yeah, but you're doing everything you can do. Does that make sense?
I thought he would call back because fuck, but then I thought about him. I mean, he's another guy. I gave him a bike one day. We used to be bike guys.
Yep.
I always grew up with bikes. I loved everything about bikes until I got the lawnmower bike.
Put the lawnmower engine on the bike, the little mini bike?
Yeah, I had that one. I had the fucking the Honda Mini Trail. I had the XL 75, then the 80.
Wow.
Then I got an XL 125. Then I bought a Kawasaki 175. Then I had the accident, and then no more motorcycles or bicycles in my life. That was the end of it. But until that time, I was a big bike guy, and this guy and Michael Clemens, who his family had fleas.
That's a great name.
You know those people that the whole family's got lice?
Yeah.
So it was
the special shampoo.
They all had crew cuts. And nobody ate the sister's pussy. She was hotter than fuck. The sister was hotter than fuck, and she lived... He was a bike dude that was sober, like a great kid. Mike was a great, great, great kid growing up.
Yeah.
He would come out of, like, if you were a little kid, he would come over and fix your bike for you. He wasn't gay or nothing. Yeah. He was just a great guy.
Good dude.
We were about the same age. And in between us lived Valentine. And Valentine was the bike kid.
Okay, that's the guy that's the dentist now?
He would jerk off over bicycles. Like, I had never seen anything like that. Like, if we would walk to the Spick store, in those days, there were two stores, the Spick store and the Chink store. All right? The Spick store was Herman and his wife.
Herman was his name?
Yeah.
That's the best first name ever. Herman.
Sounds like it was a Jew.
Oh, and really?
He was friends with Martin and Maricón, Martin the Fag.
Oh, my God.
That was his brother. That was Herman's brother. And Herman didn't claim him because he was gay, so they wouldn't talk to each other.
So why isn't this a TV show?
So my mother called.
This is a TV show.
My mother was friends with Martin because he was a drug dealer, and he lived under the Garcias, which I was friends with. Like, I grew up with the Garcia girls.
Oh, my
God. The one Garcia girl would forge my report card. When I got left back, she's the one that would make copies of my report card, switch to grade number.
Oh, my God.
She was brilliant. She was already doing IDs. When she was in high school, 16, I'm not going to say her name, she was fucking doing IDs for people. She was that good of a fucking counterfeiter with white out and printers and a the printer jeweler's over loop a printer.
Yep.
You have no idea.
What about the like the report card one? Freaks me out. So what? That she would change you to like an A's, straight A's?
A's, B's, a B minus. You know, no, realistically, and then attendance.
What's she doing now? Is she in that business?
No. She's a married chick that was married. She came to one of my shows in Jersey years ago, and I have a phone. I check in with her every 6 months. She
That's
was
cool.
married. She married a great, great friend of mine who went to medical school for like 32 years.
Wow.
Like his family had so much money.
Yeah.
His mother was a doctor and his father was a doctor.
Okay.
And they were famous Cuban doctors in Union City.
Okay.
And these kids went to like... the Dominican Republic to be doctors, and they just stayed down there.
Just had fun.
Like, just had partied with the money. I mean, when we were kids, he would just go upstairs and take money out of a box. Since I was a kid, there was in his mother's room, there was a silver box in the thing with a combination on it. And they had the combination, and they would just go up and take whatever they needed.
Wow.
And we would go into the city. We'd go into Hoboken and eat on 4th Street. We would go to Hoboken. When I was like in the 7th and 8th grade, this guy's name was Lefty. And he would pick me up in his car. And
how old were you?
7th, 8th grade. And he probably was a junior in high school.
Okay.
And he had a car already. And he hung out with this dude, Sergio Cat. I mean, they were just a crew of characters.
Yeah.
But Lefty knew every cool weed spot in the city. Like when I was in the 8th grade that summer, 8th to freshman year, he had a basketball court in his backyard. And I pretty much, you wanted a comp, like when you wanted to fucking play ball against the top ballers, you went to Lefty's backyard.
That was happening like every day? Like
every day at like 4 o'clock. And at that time, there were two All-Americans from Hoboken, New Jersey, Juice and his buddy Charlie or something. Charlie was Juice, and there was another one. They ended up going to Boston College.
Wow. Big East.
And they would take a bus.
To come play this court?
To come at Lefty's. And this guy, Hoboken led the county in slam dunks that year. When he was a junior, when both of them were juniors, they led the county in slam dunks. Hoboken. It was like an
there was nothing better than a high school slam dunk. The roof would blow off a gym.
And here's the crazy thing. That in high school, this team was touted like one of it was like them and Sacred St. Anthony's from Jersey City. Like
St. Anthony's was even established then.
Oh, yeah.
Was Hurley's dad the coach then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they had a kid named Rich Weinert, who was my idol. He was 6'7". He ended up going to South Carolina to a Gamecocks.
Wow.
And that guy, when I first went to Superstar Basketball Camp, which was Hurley's basketball camp, I was in Hurley's basketball camp the week Elvis died.
Oh, my gosh.
That same week, I still remember reading the paper, like that Wednesday. I would take the number one bus from North Bergen to Journal Square and walk past Hudson Catholic, where Michael Corrin and Jim Spanarkle went. I've discussed this at that. Now, at this time, these two motherfuckers from Hudson Catholic were playing both in the ACC, which at that time was fucking.
Wow.
So Michael Corrin was starting at North Carolina as a freshman. He's white dude, 6'7", Jersey City boy, and on the other side of Duke, his teammate was at Duke, Jim Spanarkle.
Wow.
But not really for basketball. He got a scholarship for his fucking coconut.
Wow.
Jim
Spanarkle
was still
dude.
On TV. Yeah, we discussed this shit a long time ago. I don't think it was with you, with somebody else. So Sacred Heart, it was Hudson County, Sacred Heart, and North Bergen, and Hoboken. And then you had East Orange, who everybody from Louisville at the time would go from East Orange to Louisville. They would call it Louisville Connection.
Gotcha.
That guy would just recruit East Orange, all those black neighborhoods in there.
Yep.
And they were fucking flying. I remember they went up against the team that went up against Houston with Fly Slammer Jammer.
Yes.
In Louisville that year.
Yes.
Four of the starters were from Jersey.
Wow.
Like that, they called it the New Jersey Connection, Louisville and shit. But anyway, back to Lefty.
Yep.
Lefty, when I was growing up, would take me into, like, that's the first person who ever took me into this. Like, I was buying weed in town.
Yep.
And he would go, don't buy this shit. Come on, let's go into the city. And I was a Catholic. I was a devout Catholic. Devout. This is when I first started losing. This was the first time I ever really lost faith in Catholicism.
Okay.
For the first time. He took me to a church in the village. And he goes, come on, get out. Let's go buy some weed. And I go, where are we going? And we went into the basement of the church. In the basement of the church, it was a bingo room.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy down there with all types of weed, like green weed, brown weed. And in 1978, he used to sell this shit that was like a brick. Mm-hmm. And he would, it was like weed packaged and dipped in hash oil. That's how ahead of the game this guy was. Plus, he sold bars of hash.
Wow.
And I'll never forget going downstairs and paying for the reefer and the hash and looking up, and the priest was in the corner. The priest was letting this guy sell weed and
to kids
as a way to get money. And I was like, crazy. That's when I first saw things for what they, you know what I'm saying? Like, I came from a fucked up world.
Yeah.
But now I'm downstairs in a fucking church buying weed.
And you're a kid. You're 13.
I'm 13. And I was like, wow, the world is fucking real.
Crazy.
Like, this is fucking crazy. And I didn't know nothing about pedophilia or nothing like that in those days. I wasn't hip to none of that shit about priests. I didn't know nothing about that. I never heard nothing.
Yeah.
If anybody was a pedophile, it was me or something. I don't fucking know. I, you know what I'm saying? I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
But.
Then you were talking about the bike guy, how you tortured him.
No, but I was trying to think how come he never returned my call.
Yeah.
And him and I were like Goombas, like here, because I knew he had that twitch for stealing. And everybody thought he was just a nerd.
Okay, the bike kid was had a twit. Oh, right.
Like, he liked stealing bikes. And then he would bring them home, and he would cut them apart, and he would see what Michael Clemens needed, and Michael Clemens would see what he needed. But Michael didn't even know he was stealing the bikes.
Gotcha.
So and then he would take the frames, sawdust the fucking thing.
The serial number the off. The
serial number.
Yeah.
And he would put a tag over it with a new serial. I mean, he was tagging in the seventh grade already. And his bicycle of choice was the one from Wonderama. The Apollo, whatever, the one with the handlebars.
Like a chopper, kind of?
Yeah, like a chopper with a fucking sissy bar in the back.
Yeah, yeah, the banana seat.
He stole all those. He would steal one a day. People would be chasing him. And he got caught a couple times and beat up. Like, he would go in the neighborhoods, cut the fence, jump the fence, take the bike, and 10 kids would chase him down the block.
Sophisticated operation. Oh, no,
he was a fucking savage. He was a fucking savage, this kid. And then he would take the bikes, bring them back to his house, and switch the body parts, colors, tires, so it was a complete different looking bike, and then he would sell it to one of us,
mm-hmm.
or keep it for himself. He must have had 15 fucking bikes in his backyard, and he lived upstairs. He was a tenant to the Ortizes. They were Jehovah's Witnesses. We used to torture them, too. We used to call them up on the phone and say, that thing, oh, they all lie, and hang up on them and shit.
I really want to see the TV show where instead of the, it's your version of the Wonder Years. Just in that neighborhood would be the greatest thing on TV.
So he was a great kid, never really got high, and he was raised by a mom. The people across the street, I always say the people next door to me, and I'm lying.
Mm-hmm.
This is weird, because the other night I was thinking about this. I was thinking about women and what's going on with women now.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about when I had TJ English on the show. And we were talking when I was on the Rogan show, and I was talking about that guy Tati that I knew.
Yeah.
At that time in American period, in the 70s.
Yeah.
I really hate to say this the way I'm about to say this, but I have to say this just so people are aware.
Mm-hmm.
You would see women with black eyes from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
You would see women with fat lips. You heard domestic violence, and you just walked by it.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, domestic violence was still a little fucking secret.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't accepted in my house. Like, my mother broke that fucking thing over Juan's head, and that was it. But the thing I saw one Christmas, like, I got in trouble one time for domestic violence, and it really bothered me. This was when I was the fucking kiss of death in 95. I was around somebody who had bad energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept getting in trouble with her. And one time I ended up getting domestic violence. I remember how much it bothered me. It bothered me because of the event I saw on that block when I was like on the seventh grade. There was a couple who lived across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And one night we had to let the woman in our house. And the beating her husband had put on her. I have not even seen a boxer look that bad. Like, the cops would have put this guy in jail for 20 years what he did to this chick. He burned her with cigarettes. He busted her head open.
Jesus.
He fucking cut her. He punched her. Her lip, her teeth were missing. My mother had to threaten the guy with a gun. They wrapped her up. They put ice on her. She didn't want to go to the hospital. She had a fucking side was purple. He was kicking her. And I remember talking about that dude, Tati, from the corporation, his wife, Nina.
Mm-hmm.
He would throw ferocious beatings on her. It was part of the lifestyle that you beat your fucking wife. Like, that is fucking absurd to me. That that machismo part of it, of smacking a woman in the mouth or something like that, that's fucking crazy to me. But it was something that was a little hidden secret in America. Right. You know, Irish dads, you know, they were just pounding on fucking kids. You know, I know a family where the dad was pounding on a kid. I know a family where the son was pounding on the dad.
Jesus.
I grew up with a fucking kid who used to beat his dad up with his cane.
My God.
I got to tell you something that's pretty funny. He would take the cane from him and just beat him with it. Fuck you. Give me the car keys. Fuck you. I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you. I won't do what you tell me.
Rage against the machine.
I won't do what you tell me.
Oh, man.
And you want me to tell you something funny? That kid called me about 5 years ago.
The Big Daddy Kane? The guy who was beating his dad?
And he called me, and I think he remembered I had seen it a couple times.
Yeah.
And he called me, and he goes, I've been looking for your number for a while. My mom still says you owe money, but he goes, I want to call you because my dad died, and I miss him a lot. And now I know what you were going through at that age, and I can't even imagine how tough you were for going through it.
Yeah.
And when I got off the phone, I remembered that he beat his dad up in front of him with a cane a couple times. He beat him up with a fucking cane.
Crazy.
I remember the first time I saw one of my friend's dads hit, like, not even hit, compared to what you're talking about, it's nothing, just like a little smack in the back of the head. But I was, my parents would yell, but they wouldn't do, I never got more than spanked, I don't think. Maybe smacked once or twice.
Were you?
Yeah. But I remember seeing a kid get hit. And it shocked me.
No, I don't mind seeing a kid. Oh, I've seen kids get hit by their parents. Oh, Jesus. I lived in the neighborhood where I saw people get fucking, belts.
Oh, my God.
Chased down. I mean, my mom chased me one time with a fucking stick. And she chased me, and I made believe she wasn't my mom at the pool. I was at Carmine Balzano's house in the pool. My mother told me to make the bed. I'm like, I'm not making the fucking bed.
I'm out here enjoying myself.
For if I fucking got to go back to bed, and she would go, well, you're going to take a shit. Why are we going to wipe your ass for if you're going to take a shit an hour later, right? And I would go, I'm not making the bed. And she fucking, I'm at the pool, like, with the chicks and shit.
Thinking you're the man.
Above the ground, thinking I'm the man. All of a sudden I hear, Jose Antonio. And I'm sitting there going,
here we go.
It's getting louder and louder. And all of a sudden I see her by the fence. Get out of that fucking pool in Spanish. And I'm like, who is this lady? I've never seen her before in my life. She's crazy. And I ran that way. Like, I got out and ran that way. And she chased me. Oh, my God.
How old were you? 9, 10?
No, 13, 14. This is.
Oh, God.
Yeah, she chased me.
So chicks meant something.
This was like as embarrassing. And she had already taken me into deep waters of embarrassment. There was a guy on my corner, Mr. Otino. He was really racist. And every time I'd walk by the house, he'd go, you and the niggas cutting some chickens up tonight? He would always say, like, the most racist things.
Jesus.
He would call me a spick to my face.
this show's going to have to be on Netflix.
Write this TV show.
And then we ended up becoming friends, Otino. Me and old man Otino fucking hated each other for years. Him and his fucking German wife, his Nazi wife. I hated those motherfuckers for years. I hated those people for years. And at the end, the last 2 years, we became friends. And then I would go over, after my mother died, I would knock on his door. And he would ask me how I was doing. He had one tooth.
Yeah.
And he would sit on his balcony and just criticize everybody. Mr. Totino, what's happening? Hey, fuck you, you fucking. And he would just tell me, fuck you, you fucking spick fuck. I mean, he would just insult me right out every day, dog. From the time I was 10 to I was like 13. And one day I said, you know what, Mr. Totino, suck my fucking dick, bitch. And he freaked. Like, he couldn't handle that in front of his wife. He's like, what you say, spit kid? I go, suck my dick. You want to fucking throw down, motherfucker?
Jesus Christ.
And then what happened was, I think he was there the day my stepdad took the gun out against Albie Ariza's father.
Like, it was a battle?
Oh, my God, bro. This is the story I'm getting to. That. This is crazy. Mr. Latino lived across from the Clemens. And he was on his balcony.
Buzzcut Clemens?
Yeah.
Nobody ate this.
Buzzcut Clemens.
I'm picturing the TV.
He would sit there all day and just criticize people. Look at this dirty white fuck. And the specials were Italian. And that's the only one he would talk to. So Dominic and Michael and him would sit on their balcony and they were talking Italian about people. And I understood them because
yeah,
I'm
so
Cuban.
Close, yeah, so close to Spanish.
I would understand what the fuck they were saying. They'd be talking about the American and the fucking Spicaroos. They would call them Spicaroos and fucking right to my face.
That almost sounds nice.
And I would walk past him and he'd go, "Hey, your mom cutting any chickens up tonight or what?" Like every night he would torment me about Santeria or fucking something. Like
he had one tooth.
He had one fucking tooth down here. He was bald, like he was going bald already. He had to be retired because he just sat on his balcony all day. And I remember I used to play basketball and I'd walk past him and he'd go, "I don't know when you're going to give that up. You're a speck. You're never going to be bigger than 5'8". Like he'd just say racist shit.
Dream crusher. Just
and I'd tell him, "Mr. Tino, when are you going to suck my dick?"
How did you guys become friends?
Finally, after I told him to suck my dick like 10
he
times.
He respected
Tino, suck
you a
my
bit.
Dick. No, what happened was... So the story I'm getting to is Valentine and the fucking and the bicycle. So let's get to Valentine first.
Okay.
Valentine was my Goomba, the way you're my Goomba.
Yep.
But Valentine was that Goomba you had that always gets the tail end of the fucking stick.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, his mother used to whistle for him.
Yep.
That only he could hear. It was like a dog whistle. He could be in Sea Caucus in a swamp, dragging a motorcycle dog from a train that we'd steal.
Yep.
And all of a sudden he'd go, "I gotta go." And we'd go, "Where the fuck are you going?" And you just see him, he would just tear ass home. He could hear his mother's whistle. She would go like, and he would fucking fly home. He would stop what he was doing. His mother would beat the fuck out of him.
Okay.
So we were kids. And then I had a, the first thing that happened was I bought a motorcycle from Richie Vanacek. Richie Vanacek had one of those bicycles that I already had a Honda 50 and I had already had an XL 75 and I already had an 80.
Wow.
But to be cool, Richie Vanacek was selling his lawnmower one that he had bored the engine out. So it was a strong, it was like a 75.
Wow.
Only on the old frame.
On a normal bike frame?
The mini bike frame. The two with the two little tires and the whole thing. And it was the one that you pull, the lawnmower, you fill it up with gas and a little oil.
That seems really dangerous.
Oh, my God.
We were little baby kids, and kids would just go fly around the block.
You would fly around the block on them.
Would they explode?
Nothing.
Jesus.
You would hear them, though. We'd run.
Yeah. You would pull the rope. And that's how, you know, you could tell if people, like just a couple people had those. You would pull the rope, and it was an engine tied to a rope like this, and you would pull it, and it would spark fucking tremendously. And you would put gas, you'd go to the gas station and fill gas, but the cops couldn't see you. If the cops saw you, you get pulled over and they take it away. So you always riding from cops.
Not street legal.
They weren't
street
legal.
That's what everybody would say.
So no matter if you had it, if a cop caught you, they would take them away or warn you or whatever. So you were always on the fucking lookout. You were living like a rebel at 12.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So I already had all the motorcycles, but Richie Vanacek called me one day and he goes, "Listen, I'm selling the black one. I need money, $35. So on Christmas fucking Eve, I walked over to Richie's and gave myself a Christmas present. I bought Richie's motorcycle. I think I traded him a weed and a bike. And I ride it home, but as I'm riding it home, Richie goes, "Bro, be careful. The seat is not screwed in.
Oh, Jesus.
You got to get a new nut come off of the seat."
Okay.
"So be careful on the ride home." So I ride the thing home through Charles Court, up fucking Liberty, whatever that street is, and I make a Union Turnpike, and I make a right up, give it that terrace. And as I'm going in my garage, the windows start going up. The storm window, the screen, the window, the other window, and his head popped out. He's like, "What do you got?"
Oh, Valentine heard it?
Because he heard it. He was a motorcycle enthusiast.
Yeah.
He goes, "What do you got?" "Oh, shit, I'm coming now." And he fucking slammed the thing, and it had to be like 8:30, quarter to 9, like
Christmas Eve.
And he comes down, and he fucking... "Oh my God, we're gonna have so much fucking fun." But it had just snowed.
Oh no.
It had snowed like two days earlier. And all that was left, the streets were clean, but there was black ice.
I was gonna ask about that.
And the sides were like 2 feet of snow.
Okay.
But the streets were clean.
Yeah. But that black ice is treacherous.
So he's like, "Oh man, I can't wait to bore this out." He goes, "We're gonna take the top off. and we're going to put a fucking thing in there.
He could see all the potential.
Yeah, he could see all the potential. But like, what he wanted to really ask me was,
can he ride the fucking thing?
And he's like, you know, oh my God. Yeah, well, and he goes, do you mind if I ride? I go, oh, yeah, get on the fucking bike.
Huh.
So he, I thought he was just going to.
It's going to be terrible.
I thought this motherfucker was just going to like, you know, whatever, that's it.
Yeah.
No. North Bergen is known for having the second hilliest town in the country behind San Francisco.
Okay.
Every block is a fucking hill. That's why my heart is tougher than debt, because I walk those hills in North Bergen. Yep. They even have a fan page on Facebook. If you grew up in North Bergen, if you walk the hills in North Bergen, you have no idea. Like,
the sledding must have been great
when I went home, I was talking to Dee. I go, Dee, you know how many times you walked up that hill talking, mixing Gatorade and vodka as we were walking up to the butt? We would run up that hill.
Wow.
That's the shape we were in. It was amazing. That 46-foot hill is a fucking monster. So Dee goes to the top. Valentine goes to the top of the fucking hill. And I go, Valentine, be careful because deceit. So he goes to the top of the hill and he pops like a wheelie and he fucking, and he's coming down my block. And I'm watching him. He's a good rider, you know?
Yeah.
I'm watching him and all of a sudden he's like 10 feet away. He looks at me weird because he hit black ice.
Which is not good if the seat's attached.
The seat wasn't attached and he was on it. And all of a sudden I made eye contact with him as he hit the black ice, right? And he started losing control of the bike. And
like Pee Wee Herman when he gets on the motorcycle. He goes through the billboard.
And I could see him, like, he's panicking. Like, he hit black ice, and it's a threat of it. You know what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, dog, the fucking, he's squeezing the brakes, and he's hitting black ice, and he just fucking missed getting hit by a car, and he didn't turn pike, but he crashed against Lucy Snowbush's wall, like, the plants, the cemetery, flowers, all that shit, and I think he ended up getting stitches on Christmas Eve, and something else, like a broken finger, or a broken wrist.
He didn't snap his neck.
And my bike was perfect. I just picked it up and walked it home.
He's down there. Merry Christmas.
He's like, where are you going? The seat was up the corner. Like, the seat had flown off. What happened was, he hit something, and the seat started sliding.
Oh, God.
So his arm is like this, and all of a sudden the seat flipped behind the thing, and his arm is still on it, so he just let go of the bike.
And just let that go.
And let the bike go, and he just slid. Bah! And you could see as he's sliding on the ice on his fucking back. And he had a big scrape on his back. I mean, it was just a nightmare. The next day I saw him, he's like, I don't even know why I got on that bike and all this shit. That was accident number one while he was around me. Now, his mother didn't really like me.
I was going to ask about
his
that.
His mom didn't really like me at all. His mom didn't like me at all. So now, a year later, I get a bunch of dough together, and I go up to Sears and Roebuck, and I buy one of those fucking bikes. And I bring it down the hill. I mean, I rode it all the way from Sears Roebuck. I pull it up in front of my house, and it had like the ring a bell or something that made a noise, and he pops his head up. Oh, shit.
Yep.
A new bike. He comes down again. And he's looking at it, and he's like, oh, we're going to put a sissy bar on this, da-da-da-da-da-da. This is like a year later after this thing. And he's like, we're probably 12 or 13. I don't fucking know. Yeah. We're young. Again, all he wanted to do was take a ride on the bike. It had those, what do you call those handlebars? Like this, where you hold them like this, and they go like this.
Yeah. Like, it's like it makes a big U.
Yeah, like a kinda big U. So he's on the U. Again, he goes to the top of the fucking hill. Oh, it's the summertime. The birds are chirping. The clouds are out. It's humid. The ice cream man's about to come.
Spring, summer, fall.
Kids are out everywhere. He goes to the top of the hill, and he's speeding. I already rode this bike down a fucking hill. I went to 38th Street Park and showed it off. I rode on Union Turnpike. I bring it home. They built it for me at the fucking Sears. Like, I took it off the thing. Like, we ain't got time. Just give me the fucking sample.
That's
take
awesome.
$10 off or something. $3 off, and they gave me the sample.
The floor model.
The floor model. I ain't got time to build it. But they go, no, we still got to check it out. So they checked it out, and I rode it home. I get home, and there's Valentine, and there he goes. He wants to ride the bike again. He gets on the fucking bike again. Again, he goes to the top of the hill. pops a wheelie and he lands and he's fucking speeding down and I could see him like, oh, and people are like, go Valentine, go, and he's like going, and all of a sudden they didn't tie this knot here on the bicycle and the handlebars went like this, they just went down, and all of a sudden he's looking at me like, again, and again, bah, 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 bah. Stitches, broken hand, yeah, the whole fucking thing. I pick up my bike, I bring it in like nothing happened.
He's like, I'm not getting near that kid again.
So,
what about the time at the fire?
What?
What fire?
Wasn't there like a thing of bug spray or something?
That was the, so now a year goes by again. Now we're into hanging out in the woods. We're
going exploring in the woods was so the greatest.
We had the woods behind our house.
Yep.
So there was a soccer field where we ended up robbing. We robbed all the tin metal off the roof where the people sat under. Like people would sit there and watch soccer games. We stole all the metal one by one with a ratchet set every night. Me and Mike Denny, the devil.
The copper.
The metal.
The storage drains?
That thing that goes like this.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Metal sheathing type
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Each of those sheets was $80. That's a gram of blow and fucking $10 of gas for each of us. And we would go up there with a ratchet set and take three
as
at night.
The game was going on?
No. Oh, like in the off season, they came back in the season and go, what happened to our fucking roof? And they had to put a whole new roof on it. I mean, we took every sheet of fucking metal off that thing. So, and that took you to Columbia Lanes, which was a pool hall combination bowling alley. They had the best chocolate milk. Upstairs, out of the machine, the milk machine. Remember when the milk came in bags, and they would put it in the thing?
Oh, you press the thing. Yeah.
Oh my God, they would give you Yoo-Hoo, like a chocolate milk,
ice cold chocolate. I haven't had a chocolate milk in
with a fucking
15 years.
With a fucking straw in it, they would make it fresh with a spoon.
I love that you were robbing a place and then still a kid. You're like, I'd like some chocolate milk right now.
That's the TV show.
But that was part of the soccer field had nothing. The soccer field was Schützen Field.
It was a
German place. It's still there. They do big time parties.
Okay.
And they did soccer back there. And when you rode your motorcycle back there, a guy would come out with a German shepherd and a knife. And his name was the chef. He was the chef of the place. Oh. And he was a true Nazi. And he would go back there yelling in German, get their fucking slicing, gang, 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 off my fucking field.
Wow.
And he would chase you off there. There's a couple times he chased North Bergen baseball would practice there. The Todd brothers, Rich and Jeff Todd, they would practice there. He chased them off there with a knife. The guy was crazy.
Wow.
So you had to be crazy in Schützen Field. So we started going up there and drinking and partying and shit.
Yeah, as you get older.
So we started going up into the woods. And then one night, it was the winter, so we would go up to the woods, get a bottle of Boone's Farm.
Yep.
And six of us would drink it and fucking light fires.
Okay.
And every night, the challenge was to light the bigger fire.
Okay.
You know, like tonight I brought a piece of plywood and I stole some gasoline from my uncle and we'd make a fire.
Yeah, like a campfire.
We did this for about 2 weeks. We included Valentine. He gets up there one day and he comes up with a jar with one of these, only bigger.
Okay.
It was this thing right here. It was a Lysol can.
Yep.
He brought a Lysol can up with him. We had the fire going. There's eight of us, okay? He goes, watch this, guys. And he throws the lights in the fire. We're sitting there for about 8 minutes.
How close are you guys to the fire?
I mean, the fire was right there where that fucking...
The clicker is?
Where the clicker is. And we were surrounded around the fire. It was wintertime. And he goes, let's throw this in and see what happens. He throws it in. Everybody's moving back like a fucking... Like Rambo's coming out. Yeah. Not him. He's right on top of it, right there. About 6, 7, 8 minutes go by. We forget about the fucking can. And all of a sudden you hear, boom! Let me tell you how life, I saw the can blow.
Oh my God, was there shrapnel?
And you see this piece right here?
Yeah.
This blew from the thing, and you saw it. It went right in the direction. Like I saw it, like... I was looking at it, walking back, like going, this is not going to be good.
And yes.
I was walking back, like me, Dominic Special, God rest his soul. It had to be Louis the Nigga, Louis Hernandez, Carlos Perez. It had to be a bunch of those guys. And I'll never forget walking back and hearing the boom and seeing something fly. And Valentine was 6 feet from the fucking thing.
Jesus.
And the next thing you know, that circle was in his leg.
Oh.
And it was burning through the jeans. You could see the smoke already. Like, it had burned.
That's a bomb.
No, no, no. It was fucking horrible, guys. It was one of the worst things. Funny and bad at the same time. Because this could only happen to Valentine.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he ran down that leg with that fucking thing. Like, it was like a cattle prod.
Yeah.
It was hot. It was fucking on fire.
Probably still has a scar because of
that. Oh, fuck yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. And, dog, after that, I can't really figure out what happened between us.
I wonder what turned him off. The last two were his fault, pretty much.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God, Joey.
That's, yeah, I looked him up. I found him. He's a dentist. But no, he won't reply. How about a shout out for Jason Hutchins, Joshua Wesley, Cornelius Burrows, Lorne Rosenker, my man, Jeffrey Collins, Andrew McCarthy, Christopher Court, and Phoenix Xavier Gladsong. I love you motherfuckers. Don't forget, May 26th, working out with Uncle Joey at the fucking Ice House. Don't forget this weekend, my little brother Steve Simone at the downtown.
It's the South Club.
It's the South Club Comedy
Ever Comedy Works.
It ain't a party till somebody farts. You know what I'm saying? Who the fuck are you kidding? Oh my God. Nah, it just bothers me that, like, I feel bad. Like,
yeah.
I really, true in my heart, feel really bad. Like, you know, just say hello. You know, but one of the bikes he sold me.
Yep.
Didn't know. I was walking out of my house one day. I dated this girl. I fell in love in the seventh grade with this girl. She's fucking beautiful. Doesn't matter what her name is. And we didn't have sex or nothing. Like, we weren't even close. I saw her titties one time. You know, we were holding hands and we'd watch Don. I was like, it was like the way Paul and him. We would hold hands and watch Donnie and Marie, and I would go to the fucking movies with the grandmother. I was an asshole.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was a little fucking asshole. That was my first girlfriend.
Yep.
And I thought you had to bring chocolates and flowers, and meanwhile, I'm not getting any pussy. I'm dry banging her in that fucking thing every night. I'm like, fuck this. But we played hooky a lot, and we'd go back to my house, and one day they called my mother. My mother just happened to be home at lunchtime. They called. So she lived catty.
Yeah, like on yards. An angle. Yeah.
My mother went in the backyard and started calling her a whore. Puta. Whoever raised that little girl's a whore. She's over here every day in my son's bedroom and just embarrassing.
Wow.
And then we got to a house. Her mother sat us down and she goes, your mother is out of control. The things she's saying back there, you're not allowed in my house no more and all this shit. And,
puta.
Oh, she was calling her a whore. Your daughter's a skinny whore.
Janice Rossi.
Yeah. That was my mother. It was terrible. Terrible. It was just embarrassing. And then we weren't allowed to see each other. And then it slowed down. And it ended up, we didn't date. And I got left back and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just broke up one day. There was at that time, I was just heartbroken.
Yeah.
I was more heartbroken about getting left back. There was nothing worse than feeling stupid.
Yeah.
And I did it over a fucking broad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got so infatuated with her that I forgot about geography. Like, I failed geography. I didn't forget. I went to summer school for geography and math.
Right.
And, like, I couldn't even resist her pussy. I stopped going to summer school just to dry hump her and be with her in the daytime. That's how weak I was, you know?
Yeah.
I was just weak. But that taught me, like, a big, like, I couldn't let my mother know I got left back. So I had to live on the straight and narrow now. So I had to study every night. There was no reason why my mother would have to get called to school. I was very careful.
Gotcha.
I had to live for 4 years very carefully.
Yeah.
I couldn't. No. I took my mother away from the game. Like, I didn't let her know anything.
Yep. No reason to even think.
No. She kept asking me, when are you going to graduate? And I said, you know what? I'm supposed to graduate, but I'm going to basketball camp instead.
Gotcha.
She's like, you're going to make me so depressed. I can't believe I'm not going to see you graduate. And I'm like, you'll be here to see me graduate high school. And I kept going. The lie just kept going.
That's how lies work.
Then I got into the freshman year. And I'm like, when is this going to stop? Then suddenly, and I, like I always said in that story, when I found her dead, the first thing that came to my mind was I knew she wouldn't find out I got let back. Mm. Like I just knew it wouldn't come to that fucking time. But New Yorker, that was the girl's name. We stayed friends, you know. Mm. We tried to stay friends or whatever, and then we became kind of friends. We all played together. I got over it.
Yeah.
I started going to karate, and I started playing basketball more, and I got back into the string of things.
Yeah.
And I forgot all about her. You know what I'm saying? I think I started dating somebody else, a girl that's dead now. Jesus. God bless her soul, Helene Ketter. And we were friends, like just like hello and goodbye. I was friends with her brother. You know how it is.
Yes.
And one day I'm leaving the house, and Valentine goes, "Hey, man, take a ride on this bike. It doesn't feel right." Mm-hmm. So sure enough, when I hit the left on the corner, I felt that the steering wheel wouldn't move fast enough.
Gotcha.
Like the steering wheel needed a WD-40.
Yeah, or a little oil or oil. Something.
So I just took the thing to Charles Court, and I went up the hill. You know, I didn't stand up, so if the chain broke, I would fall. I just pedaled gently, and I went up Charles Court, and I got to the top of Charles Court, and they were playing. I put the bike down. Charles Court is one of those streets that's a loop, a cul-de-sac kind of, sort of.
Nice.
But it does have an island in the middle.
Cool.
And a girl lived in that house. There was two houses in the middle, and there was a bunch of bushes and shit. The guy on this corner was the guy that was working with the Iceman.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that block was a hot block. That was the guy that was the guy that taught Iceman how to use the poison. Mr. Softy lived on Charles Court. So we were all playing. Charles Court had Sabatino, Dean Altman, those two kids that the father was Mr. Softy, Al Ariza. They had their own little community on Charles Court.
Yeah.
You didn't have to leave Charles Court. Charles Court had their own kids that played with each other. So given that terrorists would go over and play with Charles Court, me, Mr. Specials, Valentine, Michael Clemens, and by that time they wouldn't say it in English to his face. They would say it in Spanish. To Michael Clemens, they would say, Clemito tiene piojos. That means Clemens has fleas. Hilarious. Piojos means fleas. So after all this spick thing and spick that.
How many times did he have lice? Just once? And he never lived it down?
His whole family had it, and they could never live it down. Like, right, people wouldn't go to their
mistake.
House. Yeah, people wouldn't sleep over
one
there. Yeah.
It's done. And
forever he had fleas. Clemito tiene piojo. He still won't friend me on Facebook. But he won't friend me.
Can't get over it.
He won't friend me on Facebook, not because of that.
Wait, why won't he friend you on Facebook?
Because one day we were out there playing, and Michael Clemens got into an argument with Carmine Balzano's son Anthony. God bless his soul, too. So they got into an argument about a bike. I don't know. I was not there. I was there, but I wasn't there. You're been there, but you're not there.
Yes.
So. It's a summer day. Otino's on the balcony yelling racist stuff at people.
The tooth guy.
The Zanatis are out. Puerto Rican Nelson lived there at the time. The pervert that lived behind the fucking.
This is the best TV show ever.
I just have a map in my head, like of the house.
Yeah.
Like, I took you. I took you there. I showed you. I mean, if you watch the film, I'll show you. I'll show you where Puerto Rican Nelson lived, the Zanatis. Then across the street was Raul. Raul lived across the street. While they were moving in, me and Michael Special broke into their house.
They robbed them when they were moving in.
So I had a stereo. So I stuck the stereo, and I had it in my bedroom. Guess what? I became friends with Raul. So Raul would come over my house. I would never let him in my room. My mom would go, take Raul to your room. No, Raul can't go in my room because I had a stereo in my room.
Oh, my God.
While they were moving in from the Bronx, we robbed their house. And for years, they kept saying, well, this is a terrible neighborhood. We got robbed as we were moving in. Oh, as they were moving, the house across the street always had drama for me. They could never have the right renter. Next to them was a girl named Grace something and her sister, and they were really cute. They ended up moving to Teaneck when we were in high school. On the top of the block was a girl named Grace Savoya, a.k.a. the Onion, because Savoya means the onion in Spanish. And her mother was hot.
Hot mom.
Hot mom, and they were really sweet. Grace was very sweet. But Grace's mother was having an affair with an older man that was married.
Mm.
And this is way before Beverly Hills Cop, dog.
Yeah.
This is 75, 76. While he was up there fucking the mom, we put potatoes in his gas pipe. And he tried to start the car.
Nobody knows what I'm up to.
And the car wouldn't start, and he would fucking die. You know how many potatoes we put in this fucking car?
And he would never look there. God, maybe it's good kids have TV now.
Maybe the whole iPads aren't a bad thing.
Keep them out of trouble. Oh, my God. They probably, like, do you think they have police reports about, like, the whatever, the giving their terrorists, like, kid gang? Like, something could happen.
It was just, guys, it was just growing up. It was just growing up.
I didn't do any of that stuff.
No, no, it's just growing up. You cannot.
That's incredible.
That block. I used to have a backyard, and it was that block. It was 1 foot block, inch thick blocks of concrete.
Oh, yeah.
That are loose, and you're supposed to put concrete in the middle of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My parents were Puerto Ricans. They didn't do that. They just laid the block down in the dirt.
Yep.
And turned that into a basketball court. That's why I was such a good dribbler.
Oh, because you couldn't dribble everywhere.
No. You couldn't dribble on there. Yeah. I figured out how to hang a basketball court in my backyard and have 3-on-3 games and dribble on that floor. You'd be dribbling, the ball would jump out of your hand.
Right.
I figured out how to dribble because I would dribble there. But not only did I have a basketball court, I turned it into a pseudo baseball diamond. And I had the Green Monster, but it wasn't my yard. The Green Monster was the O'Rourke's yard next to us. Nicest white people you ever met, you know. Very polite. We'd bring over like Christmas cookies and shit.
Yeah.
They could not take us. We were playing the
fucking
Spanish music. Because
the ball's always gone. Oh, God.
The Spanish music. So I built a fake brick wall and called it the Green Monster when they went on vacation.
Was there a fence between your backyard or no?
There was a fence.
So you would hop the fence then put the wall over there?
I put the wall over there. So if you hit a home, so we put an extra guy over the fence. And we
His job is just to...
Right. So I just took bricks and put them... together.
Wait, real bricks?
Real bricks. I took them one day. I bought them from Rendel Lumber. I think Carmine got them for me. They delivered them to my house, and they put them in my backyard. Me, one by one, I took each brick, jumped the fence with each brick. I threw them over, and I built a wall that was probably 5 feet, but it was just made of brick. There was no concrete. Okay? Are you following me? It was just made of brick.
That's not a very sturdy...
No. So I made it stay like this. I don't know how. And one night we're having a softball game there. And there's this kid that has bad acne on my block. Michael Special. He had the worst acne you ever seen in your life, dog. He had a pimple on his lip one time. It was a white head around the black head that had gotten infected.
Oh, that had
to
hurt so
bad. And he bit into a cheeseburger, and the thing popped right in front of us, and you saw the pus on the cheeseburger. I will never forget that. And that place is still there, that
burger
place.
No wonder you get mad when I eat cheeseburgers.
Oh, my God. It was disgusting. He had pimples everywhere. He had the worst acne in the world.
Yeah, it's the worst. I had bad acne as a kid.
People would torture him. He had it on his back, on his neck, and they were horrible, horrible white heads. Like that just stuck out an inch. Like when you talk to them, you want to pop them. Like, let me get that pop. Let me pop that fucking zit on your forehead. Like it was just a horror show. He was playing outfield one night. And I hit like a bomb. And he's running towards the thing. towards the wall. Like Carl Yastrzemski. I mean, he's running towards the wall. And brother, guess what this motherfucker does? He tries to put his foot up on the wall.
I'm finally one of the guys. Wait until they see how good of an athlete I am.
When he fucking went through that wall, you should have seen the look on his face. All the bricks were on top of him, stitches, the whole thing.
He won't talk to
me either.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, I talked to his sister, and his sister and me connected out here. 15 years ago, and she told me that she asked him if he knew me, and he goes, nope. And I go, that's a lie. And she goes, no, he makes believe like he doesn't know you today.
Wow.
Because the abuse on him was so bad. Like, he still, like,
he only
talks to one kid, and his younger brother died. Oh. So he always blamed us. Didn't blame me. Because I wasn't with the brother when he died. Me and the brother.
He was a kid when it happened?
He was 16. The brother that died was 16, and Michael was probably 18.
What was his nickname?
That's sad.
What did they call him? creature feature or something. They call them something.
So was the sister older or younger?
Younger. And she was about five when Dominic died. Mm. So she calls me from time to time. We always talk on his anniversary, August 4th. We were into THC crystal. And he took it one day, you know, with these older guys and jumped into, not Lake of Pacon, but the quarry or something in Jersey.
Dude, that was always happening. Like those late 70s, that stuff was bad.
And he fucking drowned. And I still have a picture of him. I light a candle for him every Monday. And I put a glass of water for him. You know, he was my Goomba. But he got involved in something and I stopped hanging out with him. Like I just, we outgrew each other. But yeah, we went to offense, defense, football camp together. We did a bunch of things together. But the older brother hooked up with, he quit high school and he hooked up with an older woman. So when the brother died, he blamed it on himself for not being there. But what happened with Michael Clemens at the end was that one day Anthony died, but Anthony was always getting into arguments. And then when a parent would come out, Anthony would yell at the parent. And then when the parent would say something to him, Anthony would go home and get his father to beat him up. And it was classic. And at that time, everybody knew of Carmine's reputation.
He was the toughest guy in the neighborhood.
He was the mayor's driver. And he was a detective.
Yeah.
And he was involved with a lot of people, and they were lighting fires. So I used to call him the Torch. Because he had a go-go bar slash flea market. In the daytime, it was a flea market, and at night, it was a go-go bar.
Wow.
So it was known that he was good at fires, but one day they actually caught him. He tried to light the go-go bar on fire. And some kids were outside playing. They're like, mister, there's smoke coming out of the building. He's like, there's no smoke. You're not seeing anything. Here's $5 a piece.
Get out.
Those kids went out and called the police. And then they tried to prosecute him.
Wasn't he a police officer?
He was a cop.
Yeah.
And he still kept his job. And he got, because he faked a heart attack. So you fake a heart attack instead of going to jail, and you don't have to answer questions until you get out of the heart attack, so you get your attorney up. So if you get in trouble, you get a heart attack, a fake heart attack, and you're fucking, this was classic. So by this time, he was notorious. He had already beaten up Mr. Robson.
Did you guys see it?
Yeah. That's how I became friends with the family.
Oh, I remember. You stood up for the kid, right? You stood up for Anthony, right?
I stood up for Anthony by mistake, like not knowing, just from what I had learned.
And you just moved there, right? From New York.
I had lived there for about maybe a year and a half, and I had not gone to play with those kids. I was petrified of those kids.
Yeah, I remember that feeling.
Those kids didn't look like the New York City kids that I knew. They looked a little harder, a little weirder.
Yeah.
But once I got out there, I liked them, and I became friends with this Italian family.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a lot for me when I was growing up. I had a no-show job at Horace Mann as a janitor.
Wow.
I had a no-show job at a park. He took care of me. Like, it was fucking. Yeah,
understood. You're a family.
I was telling Lee last night that his famous words to me always were, if you want to kill somebody, invite them over for dinner. And I was like eight, and I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking
age
about?
Age inappropriate advice.
Like, I met him when I was 10. I'm lying to you. I met him when I was 10. And from the time I was 10 or 11 to fucking after he did it, then he finally invited somebody to his house and he shot him 7 times in self defense. In October of 83, he fucking shot a guy. Or October of 82, he shot a guy 7 times in the back in self defense. And they found out he ended up owing the guy $500,000. That's why he shot him. They put a gun in the guy's hand, the guy laid him down, and Carmine lost his job, but he never lost his pension.
Wow.
This was a crazy block.
And he was the king of the block.
So, but he lived on by the park. But wow. Given that terrace belonged to him, and Anthony got into an argument, so it's a summer day, everybody's on the back, they're all Italians, everybody's on the fucking block.
Mm-hmm.
Michael gets into an argument with Anthony gets into an argument with Michael's father.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony goes, really? I'll run home and get my dad and we'll fucking figure it out. He came back with Mr. Carmine, handcuffed him and beat him up in the neighborhood in front of everybody. Just started punching him like you see in the movies.
Wow.
With the handcuffs on. And the guy's yelling, police brutality, police brutality. And everybody started sweeping.
Not my business.
Everybody on the bunk started sweeping or they went inside the house. the only person who was standing outside was Otino, yelling in German and shit, whatever the fuck, and his Nazi wife.
Was that the one where he had two cruisers come up and they were writing tickets to fake people?
Yeah, and then the cops would come, they'd write fake tickets, and then that he beat him up handcuffed. And then he unhandcuffed him.
To make him apologize?
No, he unhandcuffed him and left him on the floor. And then they were yelling and screaming, didn't anybody see nothing? We're going to press charges. And the whole block was like,
nope.
We don't know nothing. We don't know nothing. So he got really, he never friended me. He never friended, you know, I tried. He's active on there.
Yeah.
But I spoke to other people from the name and they go, no, he never.
He just wants to.
After that day, you know how embarrassing that is to see your dad get beat up and nobody fucking stick up for him?
Yeah.
But after that day, I became friends with Otino, though, because Otino saw I was tied up with Karma, and he's like, oh, okay, I won't call you Spickman.
Yeah.
So now I was allowed to sit on this block and talk to him at night, and I go over there at night and sit there in the summer nights and talk to him. That was a very interesting block, man. That was a very interesting. Puerto Rican Nelson, the pervert. The one who would play football with us and shit in a robe all the time. He always had a robe on, bro. It was the weirdest fucking
thing. This is the greatest TV show that's never been made yet. I'm serious, Joey. This is too good.
I love how this all started with talking about forgiveness, too.
Yeah, this is what it's about. It's forgiveness, really. I never forgot none of those stories. I never forgot that. And there's more. Like, when you bump into people. Like, I talked to Gina a lot.
Whose sister was that?
Gina lived on Charles Court. I just talked to her 2 days ago, and she's like, are you on the podcast? I want to talk some shit. So I might have a call in.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I still talk to her. And one of the guys, the people who took me in, he's running for something in town this May 5th or something. I don't know. I don't know what happened if he won or not. May 9th, I don't know when the election is. But it's weird that when we went down there, remember, a guy came out. Me and Lee went to that neighborhood, and we sat on that. That street is completely different. That's at one time, that street, in the summer, it would have 15 kids on it.
Yeah.
15 fucking kids.
Yeah.
And the street over, 38th Street Park, there had to be 30 there. And Charles Court had about 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Liberty, even the block where the school was, that block there was a hot block. It was the Messinas, the Canellas, who's called into the podcast, Ray Canella. He owns the fucking horror show thing. Richie Vanacek lived on that block. There was Deborah Musella. That was a hot block, too. We had five.
Talk about good times.
And then you
people.
Talk about across the park, the Balzano block. That was Carmine Balzano, Carlos Perez, the Carneys. Brian Carney, one time we pissed in a bottle. We put a lid on it and put it back in the six-pack, and he took it out and drank the piss. Hysterical. You can't write that shit. Do you understand me? He was sitting there for an hour with this piss just drinking and going, man, hilarious. We pissed in a nip, one of those 8-ounce beers, and we put the lid back on.
Just a little pony bottles, little dip.
Till this day, anytime you mention Brian Conner, they're like, man, didn't he drink piss one time?
Yeah, like, I love how nobody ever gets over the most embarrassing, worst moment of their life is what they're known for forever. Didn't he drink piss?
Didn't he drink piss one time? And he had sisters and shit. You had the Benders. You had so many fucking people on that block, like so many kids, and now you don't see a kid anywhere.
No.
Like, not even by fucking accident would you see a kid playing or talking or doing anything. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart. Look at Lee. Lee goes, I never did none of that shit. Like, I had fun, man. Who fucking builds a wall out of bricks? I never thought somebody was going to go
through it. In someone else's yard. What are you...
They
made the mistake. Yeah.
I just left it there too. Yep. They came back from vacation in the O'Rourke's like, what the fuck? They just saw bricks with blood on it. They were like, what the fuck is going on?
I could see my dad just be like, honey, just don't ask any questions.
You have
like,
no idea how crazy. And then next to them was the Specials, but next to them was an Irish family. And I just became friends on Facebook with the younger kid. He was Vita's age when I was 16. His name was Timmy.
Okay.
And he had an older brother who was just nuts. Like, they had already said at 16 he had killed somebody. Like, him and the Gizzies hung out. Like, he hung out with a tough crew that was doing heroin.
Wow.
But he had a girlfriend, Angel, and a sister, with two Italian girls that were banging. Do you understand me? Banging at 50. Yeah. If I was 12, they were 17, 16.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole...
And I'll never forget, we were at the soccer field one day, just minding our own business, and we heard, like... And we looked over a wall, and there's Maloney. That was his name. Timmy and something Maloney brothers.
Yeah.
And they had an older brother who was crazy wild, and people knew not to mess with him. Like, he didn't even hang out in our neighborhood. He would just walk past us and look at us like, fuck you kids.
Yep.
Like, you don't know nothing about life. And he was fucking Angel. He had dug out like a trench in the side of the bill of the fucking hill. And they were hitting. They were hidden in the sting. And we're up there with him, and I remember her pussy was hairy as fuck. He flipped her over, was fucking the doggy style. And we were like 12. Our heads were about to blow explode. The fuck up. Like, we had never seen this in personally.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This was like the crazy. This had to be like summer of 75. That was like my craziest summer with those guys. Like, we had a great, great summer, like that Sam summer, Sam, and all.
Yeah.
It was like one of those summers where it was hot. But I'll never forget that. We looked over and we started giggling like little faggots. And he stopped what he was doing. He's like, "Who's up there? I'll kill you."
You don't want that dude coming
and
after
dog,
you.
Dog, we ran. And then he would see us and he's like, "I knew it was you watching us. I'm going to fucking kill you, motherfuckers. I'll poke your fucking eyes out." And we would just be like scared, like, "Oh my God, Timmy Maloney." He ended up ODing a couple years after my mother died.
Wow.
And the old man died, but the son, the little guy, still. And I finally friended him on Facebook.
Timmy,
and he told me, "I still remember you." He had a dog, that the dog would just chase rocks, and he would throw tons of rocks, and the dog's teeth you could see would just char.
Oh.
They didn't have tips from
Chino. Even the dog was tough in that house.
The dog was tough. Yeah. And I remember when I got a dog, my dog ran away and killed one of his chickens, and his dad was gonna kill my fucking dog Crystal, and he didn't. He was a good man.
Wow. Isn't it amazing 40 years later you still remember every house, every kid, every dog that your neighbors had? Like, there's one neighborhood I remember what people gave out on Halloween from the 80s. I'm like, oh yeah, they gave out a full can of soda. I remember a certain candy bar. It's weird that you can, those memories last forever.
I can't forget them. I mean, they're who I am today. Like, that whole neighborhood, when I look at it now, it's like I'm on high alert. Like, I go in, I make a left on giving that terrace, I go up the block, I make a U-turn, I go back down to Patterson Plank Road, and then I make a left on Charles Court, I go a loop, I look at all the houses, and it's like, just, it's like going to therapy.
Yeah.
Like, you still see the people playing in front of
you.
You
see the people walking out of that. Exactly, yeah.
It breaks your
the hair on my arms is standing up. I did that.
It breaks your fucking heart. Like, it breaks my heart. Like, the you know, all the nooks and crannies, you know? Like, that house on the corner, a girl, a lady named Faye lived there who was hot.
Mm-hmm.
If she was 37, she had two daughters. And she lived on top, and her husband was like 55, but Faye was fucking hot.
Yeah.
And she had two French poodles, that one of them was blind, so she would have to walk them across the street in each arm. And she would wear hot pants with a halter top, big fake fucking titties in the 70s. And I had it in my mind that Faye had a crush on me, like... Remember when Chubby Usby had a crutch on his teacher and he brought a flower?
Oh, Miss Crabtree, you don't have to call me Norman.
Yeah,
you can call me Chubby Usby.
I was just like that. I'm like, man, she wants me. Like, I had convinced myself that she wanted me. So I set up this plan.
How old were you?
Maybe 13, maybe 12.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I'm banging her tonight, because she would walk over there about 11. And he would be inside. Usually he'd stay on the balcony and watch us so nobody could mess with her. At 11, he was old. He'd already be sleeping, so I'd make my move. So I went out with my buddies, got nice and hammered, and they're like, "Come on, come to a party with us." And I'm like, "Nah, I'm going to stay home." Fuck that. I was going to get Faye. It was a Saturday night.
You put on cologne?
Oh, I had cologne.
Tonight is your night, bro.
Dog, if I tell you, I even took like a flower, and I hid in the bushes. Like Cosby's nephew, I hit the bushes.
Start of every great romance.
And she came out to walk the dog with a fucking pair of hot pants on and a halter top. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I crawled up behind and I go, hi, Faye. She's like, hi, Coco, how are you? And I go, Faye, I really want you. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I really want you. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? I go, Faye, I have such a crush on you. And she's like, Coco, you're drunk. You've been drinking. Go home. Please, go home. And I'm like, starting to cry. But I love you and all this shit. And she's like, go home. And finally, she goes, all right, I'll let you kiss me.
And get out of here.
Kiss her on the cheek or something. And then I go, no, I really want to touch your thigh. And I touched like a little bit in between her thigh, dog, and my dick blew up like a Gaussian. I had to run home with spew coming out of me. I ran up those stairs. I had sperm dripping down my leg.
Just from touching a thigh?
Oh, my God. Just from touching a thigh, I came all over myself.
Oh, God.
It was fucking disgusting. Oh. And I know her son-in-law now. And I told him, we went for breakfast, and I go, ask Faye if she remembers when I hit on her.
And does she?
Oh, yeah. And she goes, you should come down now and hit on her, because she's like 70. And she tells Bobby every day, Bobby, I'm hornier than ever.
Oh,
she was. She's
God.
Still hot. You know, she's still bangable. We want to come down and bang her. Her own son-in-law tells me from time to time, if you want to bang her, you can still come down.
What did her daughters look like? Were they hot too?
Beautiful. In fact, the older daughter took me to get my when I first got my driving test when I was 17. She drove me to the guy that fucking that gave you the license for $50.
Okay.
And I reminded her of that. The younger sister's name was Kathy. Kathy's life didn't turn out that well.
Okay.
Kathy was a beautiful girl. We all grew up together. I could still see her face, a cute little Irish. Her name was Kathy Cardinelli, but she looked really Irish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister's Dee Dee.
Okay.
But Kathy was young, my age, and we grew up together. I never did anything with Kathy, nothing like that. We were friends. We were like brother and sister. And then as we got older, she got lost.
Mm.
She really got lost. She had a relationship, and it just didn't end well with some guy, and... And then my friend was banging her. And when I went to Colorado, when I came back, he goes, she's been asking about you. Go see her.
Okay.
And I walked into her apartment in Union City, right by the police station. And she had on a leopard suit with, like, crotchless things. Like, I had heard she had became, like, a sex thing, like something.
Yeah.
And I was curious. You know, she had never fucked me. Maybe she'd give me a little stabbing. So she's talking to me. I'm 21 years old. I was in Colorado for 8 months. I hadn't seen her in about 4 years, but we had grown up together.
Right.
And it's about 11 o'clock at night, but she tried to blackmail my buddy. My buddy that was fucking her, she tried to blackmail him.
Mm-hmm.
But then they became friends afterward.
Okay.
Right? It was the weirdest thing. They became friends afterward. And he told me, she wants to see you. So he dropped me off, but he didn't come in. He's like, I'm not in the mood to see you.
Okay.
So I went inside there, and she was expecting me, and I went in, and we did a couple lines of coke, and we talked, but she kept telling me, hold on, I gotta go to the bedroom.
Okay.
And what was going on was she had a guy back there that she was fucking. She would disappear for 20 minutes, suck his dick, and then come back and talk to me. And I was like,
That's weird.
It was fucking, it was really, it was like one of those boogie night scenes.
Yeah.
And I just left there and never saw her again until about 10 years later. I saw her at the track and she had already had HIV.
Oh, man.
And she was really skinny. And I was standing with some guys and they're like, stop, don't move. And I go, what's the matter? They go, Kathy's here. She would go, at the end in 93, she was going to the track and just hustling Johns at the track.
Oh, my God.
For 10 bucks, 20 bucks, 15
so
bucks.
So sad.
Then they found her in a car or something like that, supposedly. God rest her soul. Dead.
It is. I was thinking about, I mean, not any as graphic as that, but it's weird. Like, I used to think I was smart in school. Like, I did okay because I could memorize stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people who I thought were idiots. But it's, like, amazing what growing up can do to you. And, like, now suddenly that person who you thought was smart is still working at the high school job, and the person who thought was an idiot, the doctor somewhere. It's crazy how, like, you spend so much time with those people as kids, like, you think you know them, and you think you know where their life is going to go, and people change. I mean, people change.
Yep.
It's fucked up.
It's a very weird life, you know, and it's been a great journey, like comedy. Like, I think about kind of like Tempe this weekend. Like, how many times have we been to Tempe, you know? Yeah. And I mean, you're headlining this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay. Think about going there as an opener with Paulie to Denver 15 years ago.
Yeah.
How good does it feel, like, internally? Like, you're like, oh, my God, I used to come to this club and make $150.
Nothing. Yeah.
Like, I used to go to Tempe and pick up $500 for 8 shows.
Yeah. And I was happy to get that then.
With no plane ticket, no nothing. You had to drive yourself from California to Tempe, 6 hours in a car. Or the flight's always been 100 each way to Tempe. So you basically made $300 for the week.
Yeah.
If you went to Tempe. If you drove and had somebody drive you, you could save $100. But that's 12 hours of your fucking life. Just pay the extra yardstick and fly.
Yeah. I'm grateful for all of it.
Yeah, like, I can't believe, like, that we were lucky to make this journey. Like, I can't believe that it was you, me, Jim Norton before he hit, and Bobby Lee.
In Vegas.
Jim Norton was just getting on Opie and Anthony. Just.
Yeah, I think he was still calling into the show then.
This is how it started. This is how long I know Steve Simone.
Yeah.
That's how long, guys. And now you're headlining fucking Denver South.
Yeah.
I don't want people to get confused. No, all they have to do is go to Denver Comedy Works.
Yeah, you know, I got a promo code too for tickets. If they use the promo code nerds, they'll get 2-for-1 tickets. And it's Mother's Day weekend. I think they wanted a comedian that, you know, you could bring your mom out to the show. So that makes me feel good.
That makes you feel good.
It does make me feel good.
And you do. You tell these type of stories only with a cleaner outlook.
Yeah.
Last night I went to this thing for I'm Dying Up Here.
Mm-hmm.
And some woman came up to me and she goes, you know, you don't know who I am, but we were really looking for you a couple weeks ago. We wanted you to come to the screening of Andre the Giant.
Oh, wow.
The documentary. And I go, you know what? I look like Andre the Giant, but I wasn't really a big wrestling fan. Next time, I gave her your fucking name.
Oh, that's hysterical.
I go, anything wrestling, you call Steve Simone. And she was laughing. She goes, okay, I didn't know. I don't really know. I know Chief J. Strombo and Mr. Fuji and, you know, with the Atomic Elbow, whatever.
Roddy Piper told me Chief J. Strombo was really Italian. How great's that? Yeah, his name was Joe Scarpa. Roddy Piper was the greatest. He would tell me all the stories. You would have liked him if you two hung out.
His name was what?
Joe Scarpa.
Yeah, look it up. Look it up, Lee. Wikipedia it up and see if
Chief
that's
J. Strongbow,
true.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I really thought he was a fucking Indian.
Yeah.
And he used to sing that song, Chief J. Strongbow.
Yeah.
Chief J. Strongbow.
And he also told me that Mr. Fuji was like a gangster. Nobody messed with Mr. Fuji backstage. He told me some crazy stories. Mr. Fuji was really from Hawaii, and he ran stuff. He was a serious guy. What's it say?
His name was Luke Joseph Scarpa.
There you go.
That is crazy. I did not know Chief J. Strombo. That's fucking bullshit. That's fucking bullshit. I fucking hate when Indians play fake. What's it say, Lee? I can't read from here, though. He dead?
Joe Scarpa, yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, he died in 2012. He was 83. Wow. Luke Joseph Scarpa, born in 1928, was a wrestler better known by his ring name Chief J. Strongbow. He portrayed a Native American wrestler who wore a war bonnet to the ring and would go on the war path when fans started. See, that's not like, I can't even, like, that would never be allowed now. That's like the most racist thing. Is wrestling allowed to be racist?
It's not any good now. This was great. This kind of wrestling was the greatest.
Mr. Fuji used to throw rice in your eyes.
He'd blow salt in your eyes. And then they would say, like, oh, he's Pearl Harboring him. Like, they're so racist. Right.
He used to,
70s, 80s wrestling was great.
And he used to throw rice into the audience or something. He did something.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Steve Simone, you're a trip with this shit.
Jesus, look at that. He did it for 30 years, 55 to 85.
55 to 85.
Wow.
I remember him in the early 70s. Never mind fucking 55 to 85.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I remember him in the 80s. He was still wrestling.
The 80s, I was doing drugs. I don't know what was going on. I don't know about wrestlers quit. I didn't fucking know they even wrestled anymore. I knew nothing. You know what I'm saying? But no, it's just really weird. I brought you on today. I wanted to talk about forgiveness because you're Catholic. And
it's everything, Joey.
I really believed in it, and I thought that he would show up, but he didn't. So, and I haven't heard from him. So now I'm just going to take it for what it is. You know what I'm saying?
That's the gift, right? You forgive somebody else, so hopefully you can forgive yourself. You know? And that's, I mean, we believe. That's in our creed. I believe in the forgiveness of sins. To trust God's mercy.
You know, it's funny because I took the bicycle to Charles Court that day, and I laid it down, and I was playing the one that Valentine gave me.
Yeah.
And I was just playing, and I left the bike down, and that girl that was dry humping went over and got on the bike.
Oh, after Valentine, the handlebars bike?
The handlebars. So she got on the bike. So she was going downhill already.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my friends went around the other way to catch her. And as we ran to catch her, she went to turn onto a sidewalk, and the thing stuck, and she went over and landed on her head. And then that night, she got rushed to the hospital because she had a blood clot in her brain.
Dear God.
And she lived, and she ended up okay, but, you know, I went over and apologized for the bike, and she goes, no, I knew it had nothing to do with you, blah, 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 blah. But now, in today's world, she's angry at me. Like, she won't friend me on Facebook. You know, and then somebody bumped into her and said, you know, he's looking for you. And she's like, I don't really want to talk to him again. He fucked me up when I was a kid. Nobody fucked her up, man. We were kids. We were fucking playing. I live with that shit, but.
I think however people feel about themselves, that's how they treat others. Does that make sense? I don't think it has anything to do with you. Maybe she hasn't had the life she wanted to live, you know?
You got a point, brother.
How does confession work? I have no idea. It's
the greatest thing in the world.
So if you say it and you do what they say, you're forgiven?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, it's pretty much like our faith is that Jesus died. He paid the bill that we could never pay.
Oh, okay.
So when you confess, it's sort of like you're acknowledging where you went wrong.
And the Jews killed him, even though he paid the bill. That's when you know things are bad. You know what I'm saying? Even though he covered the spread,
covered the
fucking
spread.
Jews still came and stabbed him and fucking.
The Romans killed him.
It was the Guineas.
It was the Guineas. Next thing you know, he's fucking taking pictures on the cross. Fucking poor guy. Anyway, don't forget to see my little brother Steve Simone this weekend at Comedy Works South. I got dick going on. I'm home. Like I said, May 26th, you get the fucking Ice House workout. Nice. We got a special announcement coming soon for you motherfuckers. And that's it, and that's that. Life still goes on the same. What's up, Lee?
Steve Simone's doing my show on the 15th.
Oh, that's right.
At the Sycamore Tavern. We got Christina Pazitsky. We got Theo Vaughn. So
that's next Tuesday night.
Tuesday night.
Yes. Oh, that's great.
It's going to be a fun show.
You better hope we don't have a podcast.
Let's hope not.
Because we were looking that Tuesday night, and I forgot. He just called me for Tuesday night, so.
It's always fun.
Tremendous. That's the way to end the show, you know what I'm saying? Ooh, another one.
What are you for lunch, Joey?
I had shrimp Creole or some shit. No, it's last night. I went to that fucking I'm dying up here party, and I was eating.
How was the food?
The food was, you know, I didn't, me and I took my wife out to dinner. And then we went there, just in case the food sucks.
Yep, smart.
But there was finger food. It was like pigs in a blanket.
I love those.
They had these little, what's the pizza with just the plain, like cheese and sauce, they call it something.
Like a tomato pie?
Yeah.
What margarita?
Marguerite.
Oh, okay.
They had the little marguerite. They were like a 50-cent piece. I must have ate 32 fucking
potato
thousand.
Potato chips.
Oh, my God. I was eating them. They had little tamales. It was nice. It was nice seeing Cheeto. It was nice seeing Eric Griffin. It was nice.
Yeah, they're good guys. I love
Jim
those guys.
Jim Carrey came in later on. You know, I don't say nothing to nobody. I didn't talk to nobody.
Yeah.
One person said hello to me. Nobody really talked to me. Two people.
Yeah.
I just talked to my wife the whole fucking night.
It's nice to be invited. It's nice to get out.
Yeah, they called me, and I fucking went, and that's it. That's how you do it. I usually don't go to those things, but it was a Monday night. I got a baby, so I took the wife on a date.
It's great. Yeah, it's nice.
And sometimes you need to do that just to fucking loosen up the house.
Are you going
to
go to Mitzi's thing on Sunday?
I'm not sure yet. I'm not good at funerals.
I know.
Especially, I want to go. I've already made my peace with it.
Yeah.
So it's just how I feel on Sunday.
Yeah.
That's all it is right now.
Yeah.
It's just how I feel on Sunday.
I think we're going to have to.
It's Mother's Day. We're going to have to Uber down there. There's no parking.
No parking.
So Uber's going to be all over the Comedy Store. So I'm not sure yet. You know, you can't bring plus one.
I know.
It's going to be 700 people. So the main room is going to be the old school, and the original room is going to be the young guys.
Yeah. And then they're going to have the belly room going, too.
And the belly room going, too. And they're going to have tents outside, and 700, 800 people.
I know.
I get social anxiety around fucking three people at comedy shows. I got anxiety on stage in Tempe last Thursday, and I had anxiety at that.
Yeah. I'm not getting into, like, I had to switch my flight to fly in for it. But I'm still not going to be able to get there till like 10 o'clock at night. Starts at 7:30. I figure by then most of the people will be cleared out. I'll see Paulie, his brothers, hopefully, pay my respects. And I'm going to go straight from the airport to there and then home. Okay. And Ari's coming into town.
Yeah, he just called.
Yeah, he's staying at my place. I'm looking forward to it.
When is he coming?
I think he's getting in Saturday when I'm in Denver.
Okay.
So he's going to be staying at my place.
Well, man, I'm happy you came on today.
Thank you. I love you. Those stories were the best.
I was feeling guilty about the Vela thing, and I know you'd make me feel a little better, but that's it. He just doesn't want to be my friend. I have to accept it and move on. I made my apology. I truly...
See, you've amended your life, though.
Yeah, no, I had
see
to.
That, see, that's Look, the point of confession, though,
if I don't fucking do
Lee.
This shit, it's going to eat me alive. I got like three more things I got
to
do.
Now you have to let it go, though.
I'm fucking done. Yeah,
because God forgave you.
Yeah.
Now you have to learn how to forgive yourself, and then that's it. You move forward as a different person. Does that make sense? That's everything.
Makes
That's
a it. Lot of sense.
Nobody's perfect.
All right. Don't forget Tuesday, the Sycamore Tavern. Don't forget May 20. I mean, we got a lot of dates here, but most importantly, Steve Simone at Comedy Works South. I love you guys. Have a great fucking weekend, and I'll see you guys tip-top Magoo next Monday, ready to fucking rock. Stay black. Have a great weekend, and you know I love you motherfuckers. Kick this mule, Lee.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's the 10 crack commandments. What? Man, can't tell me nothing about this coke. Can't tell me nothing about this crack, this weed, and my hustling niggas. Niggas on the corner, I ain't forget you niggas. My triple B niggas. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I've been in this game for years. It made me an animal. It's rules to this shit. I wrote me a manual, a step-by-step booklet for you to get your game on track, not your wig pushed back. Rule number uno, never let no one know how much dough you hold, cause you know that try to breed jealousy, especially if that man fucked up. Get your ass stuck up. Number two, never let them know your next move. Don't you know bad boys move in silence and violence, take it from your highness. I done squeezed mad clips at these cats for they bricks and chips. Number three, never trust nobody. Your mama set that ass up, properly gassed up, hoodie the masked up. For that fast buck, she be laying in the bushes to light that ass up. Number four, know you heard this before. Never get high on your own supply. Number five, never sell no crack where you rest at. I don't care if they want an ounce, tell them bounce. Number six, that goddamn credit, get it. You think a crackhead paying you back, shit, forget it. Seven, this rule is so underrated. Keep your family and business completely separated. Money and blood don't mix like two dicks and no bitch. Find yourself in serious shit. Number eight, never keep no weight on you. Them cats that squeeze your guns can hold jumps too. Number nine should have been number one to me. If you ain't getting bags, stay the fuck from police. If niggas think you're snitching, they ain't trying to listen. They be sitting in your kitchen, waiting to start hitting. Number 10, a strong word called consignment. Strictly for live men, not for freshmen. If you ain't got the clientele, say hell no. Cause they gon' want their money, rain, sleet, hell, snow. Follow these rules, you'll have mad bread to break up. If not, 24 years on the wake up. Slug hit your temple, watch your frame shake up. Caretaker did your makeup. When you pass, your girl fucked my man Jacob. Heard in 3 weeks, she sniffed a whole half a cake up. Heard she suck a good dick and could hook a steak up. Gotta go, more pies to bake up. Word up, Crack King, Frank Wizard.
1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,